Community, respect, adventure, Vostan, energy. Beyond the bare necessities, these are the things that we all crave to live a meaningful, purpose-filled life. My name is James D. Newcomb. Welcome to my little show. Folks, I am really excited to bring this particular person onto the program for you. I got to know Tamara Jones, I think it was last month. I think it was April, the day right before Easter of 2023. She had the music director of the church that I attend, First Presbyterian in Virginia Beach. She had sung there before, and so there was a connection, and they made arrangements for her to come over to Virginia Beach, because this is where she's from originally, this area. And so she was putting on a concert, like right before Easter, when musicians are extremely busy. What better way to, no better thing to do than the day before Easter, put on a nice concert, and it was lovely. And I was looking forward to it, and I was told that Tamara is a wonderful singer, and that once you hear her, you can't unring the bell, is how it was described to me. She's just a beautiful voice, but some things you have to experience to really understand what these descriptions really mean. And so when we walked into the auditorium or the sanctuary and she's begins her program, wow, reports were accurate. Beautiful voice, wonderful program. And the program was a mixture of Bach and Negro spirituals, like old spirituals that were sung in the 1800s, maybe the early 1900s. And you wouldn't think of those two genres really mixing, but they worked. And Tamara's just going to give us a little bit of the rundown of how she planned that particular program, and we'll see where the great winds of dialogue take us in this program. But it's great to have you, Tamara.
Thank you so much, James, for having me. I really do love that program. It's actually, as a vocal student, what is the one skill that you're supposed to graduate and be able to do is plan a vocal program. But it is not often that we find ourselves with that capacity outside of the education realm. And so when I was deciding what I wanted to do, I love spirituals. They are a part of my hymnody, my just who I am since childhood. And putting together, at the time when I planned this program, I was actually living with friends who had done a lot of Bach. And so Bach is not something in the, oh, Millie, are you saying how, if you hear snorting, it's my dog, my very young puppy, English bulldog, but she's very snorty. But there's a lot of Bach passions. And so the repertoire aligns very well. And so why not put them together? And in the vocal training process, you usually don't get to Bach unless you're specializing in it. And so it is not something that it was ever a part of the formal education, but as a musician, you continually are growing and expanding your repertoire. And so it's been very well received. The first time I did it, I organized it with the Bach on the first part of the program, and then the second part of the program was the spiritual. And then after that, started doing it in a time-wise fashion, which seemed to flow a lot better and just was a better all-over experience overall. And it's genres that sadly do not have a lot of knowns who, it's not something that's commonly done. The voice types who usually sing both genres at the mainstream don't tend to be the same people, which is a little sad in my estimation. For had I been alive during Bach's time, would he have written any of his pieces differently? Probably not. I would dare say not. And so seeing how they go together and the beauty of the spiritual and how it has come out of it is folk music that has come out of tragedy and catastrophe, and then paired with the iconic and legendary, even arguably one of the most influential composers in the world, in all of music history who is still impacting. Like, there are Beatles songs that utilize Bach, and putting those two together and highlighting the beauty of each and how they complement each other. And it's in a way that I don't know quite how to articulate.
There are certain things that you can't articulate in words, and that's why we have music. Because there are certain things that you just can't say with vocal words that can only be expressed through a tune with accompanying words, perhaps. But there's just certain emotions that can only be triggered with music. That's something that has been said on various podcasts that I've hosted throughout the years. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any need for music. If we could say, if we could express these emotions with words, then we would. And music would just be something that, if it's there, it would just be something that's in the background. But you found a way to blend together two very powerful mediums into one really compelling program. And not only that, but it was really well executed. Just wonderfully. Now, why is it that you insisted on no applause? Like, you would have three separate sections, and then you go from one piece to another, and each piece is, I don't think any of them are longer than 3 minutes. So you'll do, I don't know, it was 10, 10, and 10, or whatever the number was, and you'd go off stage to catch your breath, get a drink of water, whatever, short intermissions, but there would be no applause. Why would you insist on that?
To highlight the narrative and the continuous aspect of it all, to highlight on a day of the week where it's Holy Week and the Christian tradition is a really big deal and there's so many things that happen and it's a really busy time in life, period. But to have the opportunity to be present in the active part of yourself being your brain and your center, and it affords, or at least for me, it has afforded more availability to receive what is being given to me in that moment. And so with the storyline as such, there are lots of programs that are not one continuous thought. And so that is the thought process.
So you want people's attention pointed in the right direction, not on necessarily on you. Now you'll have to refresh my memory. We were allowed to clap at the very end. Did you?
Yeah. Okay. You were allowed to clap at the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we were able to give some recognition for your skills, which are considerable. Yes. I'd like to know about you as a person, as a musician. How'd you get started singing? When did you realize that singing is something that you're good at, that feeds a certain need inside of you? And when did you want to make it your profession?
My voice is an exact replica of my mama. And she did not study. She's an excellent musician in her own right, but she was not taught even what solfege was until she was late 20s. And she took piano and she took voice lessons, and that was never part of it. And so
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there might be some non-musicians listening. Can you describe what solfege
is? Solfege is, if you have ever heard of the sound of music, do a deer, a female deer, those. That is solfege. And the European tradition uses solfege for how they know what note they are singing. And it is used as that. But in America, we use letter names, but solfege is still used in an abundance of weight. And so for my context, I grew up with my parents being the church musician, my dad the choir, my mom played the piano, my mother sang a lot, my dad also sang. And it was, Christmases are filled with us getting together, jamming around the piano and just swapping songs that everyone sings at their different churches and other things as well. And it's just one of my favorite things is going through the Reader's Digest Christmas book, because that's what we grew up with on our piano. And it's just a lot of fun. And they give the backstories in there as well. And so that feeds the history buff part of the storytelling. And so it was not until my senior year of high school when my mom actually asked me if I had ever considered it to pursue excellence in singing in a professional level. And so I wrote a paper on it. She was actually my English teacher at the time, fun stuff. And she, it was very informative. It was very helpful. And sadly, I was still pretty naive as to how the business works. And even 10 years ago, when I went to grad school at the New England Conservatory, I was still fairly naive on how the business works, but the business is ever changing. So there is that aspect of it. And so I knew I had a voice that was definitely loud. Definitely. And then I knew I loved to sing. I love the capacity to communicate and the storytelling and how in singing you can communicate in a scope of emotional content in a line that words just fall short of. And so I love the way that music just has the power to alter your perception and your reality and to just totally change the way life goes. When I was in high school, we had band as the very last class of the day. And I was a flute and piccolo player. And I never ended a day, even if it was a really bad day in high school, which high school days, bad days in high school can be pretty dramatic. But it was always beautiful and fun. And I loved being a part of choir and everything. And it's just it's a very different world with music, and even on the professional level, and navigating what that is. And yeah.
All right. You have as a seasoned professional, now you've been doing it for a few years. You're no longer in high school, obviously, but I definitely hear the nuance in your musicality. You have you definitely can sing loud, so you haven't lost that. But you can also sing very low, very soft, which as a trumpet player myself, I know that is far more difficult than playing loud. Anybody can play loud, but playing soft requires real skill. How challenging was that to master that? If you will admit to mastering it.
I do not think I will admit to mastering it, mainly for the data point of I cannot do it on command when I want to, just cold turkey. What empowers it? Yeah. What has enabled it in performances and in practice is the storytelling aspect for me and the intent. That really, for me, feeds the musicality more than anything. If I want to superimpose of, oh, this is what it's going to look like, that in essence gives more resistance and more pushback to the mechanism rather than just diving full in. But you can't, it still requires skill. And so it's not a matter of diving in fully without thought and all of that. That is the process of where I am, that it helps align the mechanism to flourish in the way that it needs to.
So the storytelling more or less dictates the dynamics, the nuances of the music, rather than just, I'm going to sing loud now,
right.
So I can impress you. Listen right. To how loud I can sing, but you're going to say, I'm going to sing loud because I have to do so in order to effectively tell the story. Okay.
And so that the communication piece is of the utmost for me. I'm not the technician's singer in right. that regard. I am the actor's singer.
So how do you find the right balance? Because it seems like if you have a big ego, you could say, I find myself always needing to sing loud. I find myself choosing stories to tell that require me to sing loud and impress my audience. How do you balance the ego with storytelling? I'm really challenging you, putting you through your paces.
Question. Yeah. And it's also, it's part of the land where in the operatic repertoire, it's big stuff. But if you are continually singing loud all the time, it's like reading things in all caps. It's not impactful. And so this is why it's not a story worth telling unless it has those nuances, unless it has, and even in the operatic repertoire, there's a lot of characters who they can feel very shallow and have no depth to them. And especially so many soprano characters who are either always dying for someone or whatever. But I have to have a reason for singing them more than just what is necessarily given on the page. There is, if the story that I have to tell has to come from a place of depth that's not always assumed, but it in turn gives more depth to the character itself than what someone would like to give them credit for, and reveals the power of the writing in a whole new way. If everything is loud, then nothing is loud.
That's one of the things that I learned. I don't know if you've ever heard of drum corps, DCI. Yeah. I did that back in the day when I was right out of high school. And the group I was with, we were known for being very loud. You get 66 mm-hmm. brass players playing all together, can put out a pretty good sound, especially with the instruments that we used back in the day. But one of the things that they said that has stuck with me throughout the years is you have to, if you want the loud parts to be memorable, you have to master the soft parts. Because otherwise, mm-hmm. everything's loud. Which mm-hmm. I think you just said something very similar. If everything is loud, then it's not as impactful. So you focus on mm-hmm. those impact points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you're not going to Presbyterian churches singing programs containing Negro spirituals and Bach passions, what else are you doing with your considerable talents as a vocalist?
Practicing.
Okay.
And I am very blessed in Boston to live in the place where there is a place for me to practice very close by that is very economical. And it's being right in my neighborhood makes a really big difference, because slipping downtown to go find a practice room would take an hour commute one way, hour commute the other. And it, yeah. So practicing and continually honing. I also love to produce concerts in my neighborhood and love to create opportunities for others. One of the ways that we did that during lockdown was through a quarantine series where we had a bunch of musicians who were not working for obvious reasons. And we did, from December of 2020 to June of 2021, we did monthly concerts. In June, we also did a live one outdoors and raised money to the local food pantry, paid 15 musicians, just really had a good time. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, but we had some pretty, pretty amazing experiences through that. I love moving. I was an athlete before I was a musician. And so a focused athlete before I was a focused musician, I should put it that way.
What was your sport of choice?
Volleyball, basketball, and soccer.
Okay. Yeah, that's athletic.
Those are good times. And then I studied music in college and started running, because from college on, it takes very intentional time. And rehearsals also take up a lot of time. Okay. And so I spend a lot of time with this one, the doggo, and live with my husband. And so we enjoy that. And staying active and just being a part of the community as much as possible. And doing better about putting myself out there. And that is the aspect of the professional music world that is not easily trained.
Musicians are in some ways very much natural entrepreneurs. But when it comes to self-promoting, it's extremely challenging to get musicians to embrace the concept of, I have to make people aware that I exist. And I think it's because I've sensed in you just a kind of a reticent nature. When I, just saying that you're a really skilled singer, I can, and this is audio that people are listening, but I'm looking at you on the screen. You're like, no, you're just almost resistant to it. And that's I think that's human nature. And musicians, I don't know how to explain it, but they just are so resistant to self-promotion. It's very difficult for them to embrace that and feel comfortable with it.
Oh, yeah. And just getting used to the discomfort is what it requires. And it's my teacher in grad school likened it to being a door-to-door salesman, where you just got to knock on the doors and you just got to do it and do it over. It is a hurdle to decide what are doors that I can knock on, what I should knock on, and how can I do it in a way that is consistent enough to where I'm in the habit of doing it.
Yeah.
Because that is what it takes for just... Yeah,
but you can get in the habit of it, but you can't... feeling comfortable in your own skin doing it is something...
Right.
And different entirely. Like, you can do it because you have to do it. Because if I don't do it, then I can't make any money doing this thing that I like to do, that I'm really good at. But feeling comfortable is something different entirely.
Right.
It just seems like there's... In musicians particularly, there's this cognitive dissonance when it comes to feeling like you're salesy with your music, because you're not selling styrofoam plates. You can emotionally distance yourself from a physical product. You can be selling water purifiers and then just leave it at the end of the day and go home to your family. You can't do that with music. It's always with you.
Especially as a vocalist, where your instrument is physically part of you and you are utilizing it no matter what the conversation is, no matter what is going on, it is. And Deanna Demerol described it as having a third child, because you have to mitigate everything that comes through, because the folds feel, they experience the nature of what you're going through. And so if there is stress, if there is, and all of that, it is the labor of love to share music in such a way where it is of the best offering in that moment, as opposed to succumbing to the stress and pressures.
Having said all that, what's working for you when it comes to self-promotion?
Literally, if writing the emails and knocking on doors.
Really?
That, yeah.
If, literally knocking on doors.
Oh, figuratively, I'm not. Writing the emails that knock on doors that just let people know that I exist, and making sure there is some specificity is the big point of, especially as a female, as a soprano, being very specific about this is what I'm offering, and not in ways that people are like, oh, she has a vocal identity crisis and doesn't know who she is. That is a very important factor, having recordings on there that exemplify that. Giving a little brief background. How I came to sing in Virginia Beach is I was wanting to do a concert for my grandmother, who had never had the opportunity to hear me sing. And I Googled churches in Virginia Beach, and First Presbyterian looked like one that happy to have music thrive, and sent a cold email, and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. To the music director.
2 years later, to the music director. And so finding people who are getting to know the people who are excited about the work that you have is a big part, because word of mouth goes a lot farther than anything else. Even it's not auditions that finalize and get the work. It's the advocacy for those. And so if people can't advocate for you, if they don't know who you are. And so if it's something that you want to pursue, that is the discomfort that you have to go through continually, I think. And very rarely do musicians get to a point where they don't have to.
Even Wynton Marsalis, one of the best known trumpet players in the world, is always doing self-promotion. Always. And he's just not necessarily even playing. He's just doing a Facebook Live of, we're driving to this gig. And you relate to him. You relate to him on a personal level. He does it really well. Others do it really well. But what I'm asking is, there has to be a certain marriage, for lack of a better term, between your personality and your music. Because you can't just say, I'm a great singer, you should hire me. It has to be, I'm a great singer and I'm a good person, and I'm going to use my voice to bring out who I am. I don't know. I don't know if I worded that very well, but you can't just say, I'm a good musician. It has to be, I'm a good musician with doing a good purpose.
And the in acting, where they call it your typecasting, in the same way singing, falling in line with your personality in that way, of making sure everything that you sing comes from that place of, is this the story that I am wanting to tell, and why am I singing? And I have stated that my purpose for singing over the years is to resonate in the echoes of the heart and the soul and awaken those things that would not otherwise have. And that can happen in the, it's really easy for me to pour into that with a spiritual and knowing the story behind them and the power behind them. But it is also capable to do that with an opera aria and an opera role and Bach, and fitting in line with that. If it's not a good fit, it'll make itself known.
It's interesting that you specialize in opera. And I exposed my son, Gabriel, to opera for the first time. We were in the car, and it was just on the classical radio station. And his remark was, "Daddy, this sounds really dramatic." And I think I said something like, "You should meet the people who are singing it when they're not doing opera. They're a little dramatic." My question is, when do you, as a, like a, you seem like a solid Christian, like very solid beliefs. It has to be an interesting dynamic between what you believe and the opera scene, which is most of the time decidedly not, they don't share the belief. So do you ever find yourself like there's like a conflict of any sort performing that music that is sometimes not Christian?
Gigs that I did with the Boston Lyric Opera with their Handmaid's Tale production.
Okay.
And that was an intense activity where specifically that story where there are, my belief system can be easily twisted and distorted by other to make it their own regime, be justification for acts of abuse of power.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Are you talking about like organized religion that abuses certain levels of authority to manipulate people's minds, or what do you mean by that?
It is not limited to organized religion, but any place where there is use of a belief system in order to... So I was subscribed to belief in the gospel of Christ. And that is what I would believe. When that is used to, as a regime to, for political borders.
Yes.
Or even, then it no longer becomes the gospel. That is not what I believe. That is not the belief system I subscribe to. Psalm 29 actually talks about the voice of the Lord a lot. And talks about the capable in just that voice. And even Zephaniah 3 talks about the voice of God singing over his children. And I believe that as humans, we are created in the image of God. And with that belief system comes, and with that doctrine that I subscribe to come, if I'm created in the image of God, part of that image is also in song. Here's where it gets really fun. Or, as my husband described one time, he's in financial technology. Is it any less needful or any less honoring and glorifying to God to go to work at a financial software company than it is for me to go and perform in the opera world? We have very strong opinions on both sides. No, you have to be, quote unquote, in a Christian setting to do X. But if you had to be in a Christian setting to do X, say singing, which is, it can feel like a very convoluted matter because it's always a part of a liturgy and the worship service. But if you distribute that, every word out of your mouth should therefore come from a Bible verse. And is that the way that life is designed and created for us to unfold? I would highly disagree. And that is actually, that had been a big part of my own journey of, should I or should I not?
I see people advertising various services such as plumbing or sheetrock repair or whatever it is, and then they'll have that little, and I'm talking about on the old days when we had the Yellow Pages, see the little fish sign, and
yeah,
it's like they have that saying, we're a Christian company. But it doesn't mean that they're going to come out and fix your stopped up pipes in your shower and be having How Great Thou Art playing on the
right.
radio.
Oh my goodness.
It's not a requirement. You just want them to do a good job and do it right, do it on time, and be honest with how they bill it. That's the Christian way of doing it. You don't have to be, and they could even be cursing like sailors while they're doing their work. It doesn't make them any less Christian than the person who's always reciting Bible verses every other sentence.
Right.
If they do good work and they do it with integrity and they don't try to cheat you, that's Christian work when it comes to fixing a clogged up toilet. You know what I mean?
There's a quote of Martin Luther where even the handmaid, the milkmaid, is one of the fingers of God. For one of the Psalms talks about how God strengthens the gates of a city. And Luther was meditating on that and was trying to figure out how does God do that? And God takes care of us. Like even what I'm sitting on, what I'm looking at on a screen through, I did not do everything needed to bring those things to pass. There were so many other humans involved made these things possible, like the food that is in my refrigerator, the table that I sit at. And that is how we are all taken care of. And it's very reassuring to know that this is a contribution. And it can easily come across subconsciously for performers that what you do is all about yourself. And so therefore, it does not serve. It is only self-serving. And yet, even the comment that your wife made after, she is a very lovely woman, after the concert, of the impact of what the concert had, and even the most recent concert, I did an all spirituals concert locally as a fundraiser for a local church. The impact that it had in the depths of the soul is the service that it's yielded. It has to come as a review from those experiencing it. Trying to explain to someone of, oh, this is what it's like. And therein comes the word of mouth issue. And
when did you first have the idea to blend these spirituals along with Bach? And how long did it take to make that a reality? Like you have idea to first performance. What was that process?
It was in 2016, and close friends of mine were very heavily involved in Bach, and wonder how that would go together. Obviously, there's a lot of spirituals on the timeline of the Passion. There's a lot of Bach on the Passion, and let's see what the soprano arias are and see if they fit in there. And the original three are Aus Liebe, Zerfließe mein Herze, and Sehne deine Schwestereien. Aus Liebe highlighting the love of Christ, which is why he has come. Zerfließe, a meditation on the pain of which that process is. And Sehne deine Schwestereien, the hope, cast off everything else and the embrace what we were created for. And so those original three, which they are not easy arias, I would dare say. Even the first couple measures of the vocal line is one of the most exposed in the repertoire. The text is why I chose them. And adding the others over the years, it's always been text-based and wanting to continually hone and shape and what's going to fit best. This was the year, the first time I did two short intermissions. I've done it before in one full take, and that's just, you need a space for the tension to release because it is a very heavy concert.
Yeah, it is.
Due to the content.
Yes.
So that is when I wanted in 2016 to see if they could go together. I went to the library here at the New England Conservatory and just did some research and went from there.
Nice. Is this like your dream set? Or would you say this is like, what I'm asking is, if you had your way and money was not an object, the venue was not an object, what would your perfect concert include?
It would definitely include spiritual. This, to me, fits best in It doesn't have to be done at Easter, but I love it when it is for obvious reasons. I think my perfect set would be, as of right now, this comes pretty close. This comes pretty close to being the perfect set. Yeah. Spirituals are a big part of that. And the task that I have now comes to finding more freedom and expression in my singing and in my craft. My task moving forward is to find the same scope within the classical repertoire that does not have the same backstory. And can my skill as an artist, is it up to snuff to create that?
We have been speaking with Tamara Grace Jones. Her website, I'm not going to force her to do shameless self-promoting. I'll do it for her. It's tamaragracejones.com, T-A-M-R-A, tamaragracejones.com. She's got a few videos to watch. You can get a little sampling of the wonderful music that I enjoyed in person. And who knows, maybe the stars will align where if you're listening to this and you're in need of a vocalist for something that where the program that we've described, the spirituals and the Bach, or maybe a variation of the two, maybe you have a need for it and just check her out. She over-delivered in her performance, and I'm sure she'll do the same in if given the opportunity in the future. Tamara, it's been wonderful to have you on the program, not just to speak with you here and get to know you a little bit better and hear your thoughts a little more in depth on your work and the dynamics as a musician living in this modern world, but I just say congratulations on your accomplishments, but your very honest and very authentic way of approaching music. You have a very high skill level, but you're very down to earth. You're very approachable. And in my book, that's what really matters. Doff my proverbial cap to you for a job well done.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be here.